Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Wicked Wallflower by Tracy Sumner, narrated by Robin Siegerman. Prologue. Leighton House, Hertfordshire, 1824. Lady Philippa Darlington placed the gift on the bed, as if the contents would detonate upon opening. Crawling atop the mattress, she crossed her legs and stared at the small wrapped parcel with angst, indecision, and anticipation. XM was scrawled on the back in elegant script, taunting her, as if she'd not known immediately who it was from. "Careful, little Darlington, as you navigate these treacherous waters." Xander Macaulay's words rolled over her like a wave, as they seemed to at least once a day. Sometimes at night, alone in her bed, it was the biggest secret out of all the secrets a duke's sister was forced to keep. Along with the memory of their stolen moment in the gaming room came the feelings. Heat thrummed through her limbs, through her head like champagne. Her pulse skipped, heart bumping against her ribs. She felt drunk on a man. Why did it have to be him? Her brother, Roan Darlington, the Duke of Leighton, would never allow it. Xander Macaulay would never ask. He thought her a bothersome fly buzzing about his face. Less than a fly, an ant he smashed beneath his boot. He had his choice of every chit in London. Why would he want her, an unsophisticated sister of his best friend? She refused, simply refused, to be bothersome, a burden, a nuisance. When she married, if she married, the pitiable sod would be absolutely besotted, out of his head, gone for her. Tripping along like her brother tripped along behind Helena, the Duke of Markham with his Duchess, Georgie, Tobias Streeter with Hildy, perhaps the worst case of lovesick behaviour she'd ever seen. Gads, there were men, hundreds for her to choose from, Duke to Baronet, Solicitor to Vicar. Her heart didn't have to set its sights on the most unreachable in status and demeanour. A confirmed, nay, sworn bachelor. A man born in the rookery of all places. A blackguard, a scoundrel, a rake. Hildy Streeter had done it, of course, married a rogue who'd climbed from the slums, then gone on to love him with all her heart. Nevertheless, even after observing these beautiful relationships, Pippa wouldn't follow their example merely because of a fickle attraction. She had a sister, two of them now, and the eldest, Helena, the powerful Duchess of Leighton, said she didn't have to marry if she didn't want to. But she'd also said Pippa had to try to make it through another season, at least for her brother's sake. Pippa was going to be the grandest wallflower who'd ever lived. She'd fade into every room she entered like mist, prop up columns and disappear behind ferns. They wouldn't even know she was there. Her only spot of despair was missing out on the waltzes, but miss out she would. Signing her darts card would be the most challenging feat in England. Pippa caught her tongue between her teeth and touched the package, then traced her index finger over the twine wrapped twice around it. It was simply presented, like the man himself. Echoes from carriages circling the front drive fluttered through her open window, along with a healthy dose of the crisp evening air. Fall was upon them in gorgeous measure. She heard the children first, shouts of bedlam after hours of forced containment, all arriving for her birthday celebration. She loved when Leighton House's hallways rang with mischief and merriment. They'd not been so lonely, she and Roan, since he'd allowed these interesting people into their lives, since he'd opened his heart and let Helena into its protected confines. Pippa fiddled with the package for another minute, then sighed and tugged on the bow, the twine unravelling in her hand. The paper, similar to what would be wrapped around meat delivered from the butcher, fell open to reveal a bejewelled knife. not in a fancy box or packed with additional trimmings, just the knife, tiny enough to fit in a fob pocket or her boot. With a laugh she wouldn't have been able to contain had the man who'd given the gift been sitting in the chamber with her, she picked it up and brought it close to her face. An inscription was etched in silver: "To help navigate the waters." That was what he'd told her the night he found her, with her nose jammed in the velvet collar of his coat, struggling to catch his scent, when he'd recognized her attraction. Pippa flopped to her back, the present clutched in her fist. The metal heated against her skin like an ember plucked from the fire. With a vulgar growl the Duchess Society had said she must not utter in public, she punched the mattress in frustration. Xander Macaulay remembered their stolen moment as well as she. She'd not imagined his breathless wonder, the bounder. It would be the best gift she received, the most personal. Damn and blast! Somehow he'd seen her for one brief moment, the real girl. Closing her eyes, she wondered how she would ever forget that fact. Part 1. Revelation. Chapter 1. Where a hero decides he must act to save the heroine. A soon-to-be-fashionable gambling establishment, Limehouse Docks, London, 1826.
"The lass is at it again. The hulking bloke you signed to follow her sent round a note."
Xander Macaulay let loose a curse that rang through the deserted main floor of his hell, his gaze roaming the candlelight and dense shadow to settle on his factotum's deceptively angelic face. Xander had appointed the canny young Scot to oversee the hazard tables, luring him away from a thriving business teaching aristocrats how to cheat at dice and cards. Sharps and Flats, Dashiell Campbell had called the crooked enterprise. News of it had swept the town like the stinking mist rolling off the Thames, with men travelling hundreds of miles to sit in the frigid back room of a rookery boarding house for instruction. Xander had taken a lesson or two himself, and had been amazed by his ingenious deceit. He didn't even want the lad to cheat. He wanted Dash to keep others from milking him.
"What did you tell him?"
Dash warmed a pair of dice between his palms and shifted from one scuffed boot to the other.
"Adina sent the messenger away. Waiting for an answer, he is."
Macaulay wiggled a cheroot from his pocket and jammed it between his lips with no intention of lighting it, as it was a habit he was breaking. He wished he could say he'd employed Dash only for profit. In truth, he'd not been able to imagine anything but a bleak future for a young man making formidable enemies by schooling others in the art of swindling. Overconfidence and base connections were a detrimental mix. It took power to keep the knife from your throat, and Xander was willing to share his. He'd come from less than nothing, and would never forget his desperate struggle to climb out of the slums, even if he ruled from within them.
"Where is she?"
he finally asked, because there was no use avoiding the problem, or the woman, apparently. Dash clicked his tongue against his teeth, a tell that suggested he had unpleasant information to impart.
"Right fine cauldron she's dipped her toe in this time. Core, I'm nae judge on what's suitable for a duke's sister, but I reckon this ain't it."
Riled, Macaulay shoved to his feet from his spot by the roulette wheel he'd been repairing, drawing a breath scented with the linseed oil used to polish the maple trim of the 21 tables. He didn't have time for this. Next week the Devil's Lair would open with a private event for select members of society. He had menus to review, croupiers to train, a final checklist of construction items to approve. Macaulay expected word of mouth following the gathering to bring knobs beating on his door, the only crimson door on the block, for acceptance he wasn't going to easily give. When he'd said he was opening an exclusive club, He meant exclusive. The devil's lair would make White's look like a bordello. His stomach danced with anticipation, when it had been years since he'd been excited about anything, particularly a business venture. Money came easily now, as did women. Challengers were few and uninteresting when he stumbled upon them. Even smuggling had become tedious, mostly due to the repeated requests from his closest friend and partner to buy a streeter to give it up.
"Too little return on the risk," was the common refrain.
Falling flat on his face in love, and the marriage and children that had subsequently followed, had made Tobias, former rogue king of the Limehouse docks, a dull boy indeed. Macaulay was never going to be a dull boy. He'd made a promise long ago, and he wasn't reneging for love or money.
"Where?" he repeated, though he didn't want to know. "Some masquerade right at a bloke's named Talbot."
"Talbot," Macaulay whispered, appalled despite himself. Lord Talbot was a degenerate of the worst sort, a wealthy baron on the ladder's lowest rung, who had no hope of climbing higher. And because of a roomy bank account, rare for the aristocracy, he had no need to. Pippa Darlington had outdone herself this time. Getting a dismal idea of how this evening would end, Macaulay yanked a rag from his back pocket and wiped a streak of grease from his palm. The wheel had begun making this maddening squeak on the final turn, and the lair, as Macaulay had come to think of it, would be nothing less than perfect. "Summon the Duke of Leighton, immediately. I won't tell him how or know where his darling sister is, only that Lady Philippa has again gotten herself into a jam."
"Your partner, ain't he?"
"In the distillery, the shipping venture, and a steam locomotion gambit that's going to secure enough blunt to smooth every wrinkle from his grace's brow for the rest of time. It will fund every estate resting on his ducal shoulders and buy him a fancy new one, should he be of a mood. He's happy with me at the moment, no matter having a sibling who is the most troublesome in London. I can't do much for him there."
"The Duke is in Bath, remember? His Duchess is expecting another wee bairn, and the waters are supposedly good for expectant mothers."
Macaulay tossed the rag to the floor. How many godforsaken children was Leighton planning to have?
"Truthfully, you've got a gang of high steppers in your life. Not one, but two dukes. I didn't see the need myself."
Macaulay scowled, unwilling to explain that there were three men he trusted with his life, and yes, two of them were sadly a rung below Prince. "The Duke of Markham, then. His wife, Georgiana, is Philippa's etiquette tutor. God help her. Markham's townhouse is on Curzon. If you leave now, you can be there in 10 minutes. Expect the Duchess to be disappointed about her charge's misstep. Disappointed, but not surprised." He scrubbed his hand over the back of his neck, his stomach giving a slight anticipatory tilt. He wasn't going after her. He wasn't. Dash tossed the dice from hand to hand, his expression as flat as his words.
"Duchess society. I heard about 'em. Matchmakers, meddlesome lasses. Calling 'em tutors is putting a shine on a grimy piece."
With a snort, Macaulay turned to skirt the baize-covered tables that were going to make him and this spirited young man he'd invited into his world blindingly wealthy. He was already blindingly wealthy, but the change in status would be a revelation for Dash, one Macaulay couldn't help but wish to witness.
"Of a sort. The Duchess Society polishes off the rough edges for those who've gotten themselves in dire straits. When marriage with a dowry sizeable enough to choke an horse attached to it is the only way out, they make sure the men are respectable and the women are educated about the legalities. Frightening dealings when a chit has the upper hand. Get my meaning, mate. Stay on the good side of your finances, and you won't have to adjust your ways for anyone. I've never had to."
Dash raced to catch up with Macaulay's long-legged stride.
He was a strapping lad, but Macaulay was nearly the tallest man in London and could outpace anyone.
"No one's about, Gov. That's why I'm coming to you. Duke's, Leighton and Markham, Tobias Streeter, all gone.
I tried them when I got the message, seeing as ye were with your lady friend."
Dasha's gaze rose to the upper reaches of the hill, his brow arching in wicked masculine delight. Macaulay halted so suddenly that Dasha's shoulder knocked his and threw them off balance.
"You mean they left Lady Philippa alone, when she managed to entangle herself in one predicament after another this entire season?"
Dumping ratafia on a handsy earl's head, which had caused the Duchess Society to recommend she skip last season, was nothing compared to what she'd done during this one.
"Aye, they did. After all, you've cleaned up the messes, so how's her family to ken what a disaster she is? No one has any fair idea of her mischief."
Dash scratched his nose with the pointed edge of the die and shrugged in puzzlement.
"Where I come from, Glasgow way, Paisley, if I'm putting a dart on the map, most lasses her age are already married with a babe or two clinging to their teat. A grown woman canna be left alone with 100 servants at her beck and call and keep from tomfoolery."
A prickle of alarm skittered along Macaulay's spine. From somewhere down the corridor, he heard Fast Fingers Eddie, who called himself Pierre, the chef who would make the lair a destination for gambling and food, shouting orders to his staff. Why he was unhappy when Macaulay had built him a kitchen that would rival Carlton House's was anyone's guess. Part and parcel of pretending he was French, Macaulay supposed.
"What's she doing anyway that you have to worry about?"
Macaulay shook his head, bringing himself back to the conversation.
"Lady Philippa is working behind the Duchess Society's backs. She's investigating prospective bridegrooms, then providing information as if it's been passed to her in a parlour along with the rest of the day's gossip. Why does no one understand what a danger she is to herself? Reckless termagant."
Dash tapped the dice on the rosewood panelled wall.
"They're buying what the lass is selling, that's why. The wallflower bit. I seen what the scandal sheets wrote about her. Uninspiring sister of a duke, etc., etc. They ken she's harmless. Just another wearisome society chip bleeding into the fancy fabric covering the plaster."
He tilted his head to the side, his frown one of proper study.
"It's the spectacles and the hideous garb. That putrid yellow gown she wore to the dinner you invited me to at her brother's house. Ghastly! The Marquis there thought to pair her with the left marks on the cobbles he raced away so quickly."
Macaulay gave his coat pocket and the spectacles a physician had requested he use for reading in dim light a vicious tap, as if he needed a reminder of how damned old he was getting. At least he actually required them. He bet Pippa's were clear glass. He'd love to take them from her just once and peer through them, proving his theory.
"They're a ruse, like the rest. She's a raffish irritant with perfect eyesight and better taste than she's letting on. I knew her before she thought to play this insipid role."
He couldn't understand how the Tom missed the girl, even with the ugly clothing and dull smile. Her eyes alone were enough to halt a man in his tracks. Macaulay had only seen that particular shade of green in a gemstone, often on some woman's trifles that lay glittering on his bedside table. Society disregarded Philippa Darlington's vibrancy because they preferred she not have any. And her hair. No one in London could claim strands resting between burnt honey and freshly shorn wheat, a multitude of shades that sunlight loved to play with whenever she happened to step into a broad beam. She was deluding herself if she thought a mere mask could hide her identity. He would know her anywhere.
"Heedless nuisance," Macaulay said between clenched teeth, then stalked into the room he was using as an office until final construction on the space upstairs was complete. He had a mask in his desk somewhere, probably the bottom drawer where he kept his useless items.
"Rudner made a good card sharp, your nuisance. Nice a wise gigging about at parties where she shouldna, especially since her brother is a duke, and everyone wants her to fail for their amusement. But she's got guts. Guts can carry you far in life."
"Or they can end it." Macaulay shouldered into his coat, checked his boot for his knife, his pocket for his pistol, and wrenched open that bottom drawer to grab the mask. It was onyx with bright crimson etchings around the eyes. The memory of Wyatt was in his desk, an exuberant opera singer with a penchant for games and coitus in chairs, made his stomach twist into a hard knot. Pippa was getting worse, set to either give up the ghost, marry someone she would end up hating, or implode from pretending to be a typical girl when she was not a typical girl. Playing a role she was wholly unsuited for, covering her true self with a shroud that was weighing her down like an anchor. Macaulay knew all about pretending. He was getting worse too, exhausted from living this life he'd built for himself. Women, fisticuffs, contraband, blunt. He felt all his 32 years and ages more as he gazed in the cheval mirror above his bureau on the odd occasion and wondered who the hell he'd become when it had started out differently. Christ, he didn't want to think about the past now.
"What do you care if the girl ruins herself?"
Dash asked from his negligent slouch in the doorway, lingering like a guest not actually invited to the party. Family, Macaulay thought before he could stop himself, or close to it. He and Leighton were friends, partners, and the man's little sister was making terrible choices without anyone to pull her back. Macaulay's attraction to her, and in the whispery depths of his mind he admitted there was one, wasn't the reason he was going after her. It was the bloody reason he ought not.
"Be careful, Gov. The blue-blooded ones love a bit of the stews. Dangerous, that, for both of you."
Macaulay yanked on his gloves and brushed past his factotum, who stepped aside with raised hands as if his counsel had been retracted.
"It isn't like that," Macaulay murmured, when it wasn't. Although it was a little. Damned if he hadn't had this argument with himself before.
Philippa Darlington was too young, too impulsive, too clever. Although he liked clever women. But not this one. Leighton, friend or not, would return the favour from years ago and toss him in the Thames if he dared touch her. And Macaulay was never, never attaching himself to a person in the way Leighton had, the way the Duke of Markham had. Hell, Tobias Streeter was his best friend, and the last man on this earth he'd have expected to fall. They were all sunk. Marriage was like the pox, something he was terrified of catching. Macaulay had tried to stay out of Pippa's path since the troubling incident 2 years ago, when she'd stumbled upon him in the gaming room at Leighton's country estate, and he'd had an insane, half-drunken urge to kiss her. He'd been stunned to catch her with her nose pressed against his coat, her lids fluttering like they would when she came. The sad truth was, his heart raced ahead of him on the rare occasion when they were in the same room. He'd avoided her so often, Leighton thought he was avoiding him. Add to this catastrophe the impulsive birthday gift he'd given her last year. That silly knife he'd searched all over London for. Why he hadn't been able to simply disregard the day, he wasn't sure, although he'd disregarded the party. The invitation to the ball in her honour had sat there like a smoking pyrotechnic until he'd gotten drunk and pitched it in the hearth. It was the startling way she watched him during the infrequent instances when he could not escape her. Like the moment mattered. Like he mattered. Maybe it was a game to her, this wordless flirtation, when she thought to teach him to play chess that night in the country. Her fingers all over those marble pieces had made him imagine them wrapped around his... He spun to face his factotum, his knees weak. When Macaulay was not a man used to being weak-kneed, even with a blade pressed to his neck. "Escort Lady Bergeron home, will you? With my apologies." Dash coughed into his fist, his cheeks firing. "She'll wait for ye. They always do." Macaulay bumped open the door to the alley entrance with his shoulder and stepped into the stormy night, an ache of what he suspected was loneliness zinging through him. A bitter gust blew past, tugging at the lapels of his greatcoat and sending the swollen aroma of London into his nose. Someone he didn't truly desire in his bed, both of them wishing it meant more? Aye, a lifetime of that brand of despair was what he feared most. Chapter 2. Where a Reckless Heroine Gets the Hero into Trouble. Attending Talbot's masquerade ball had been a dreadful mistake, an impulsive decision, with good intent, but still a disaster. Lady Philippa Darlington pondered this as she peered round the sculpture at the foxed couple who'd stumbled into view, their wobbly steps almost sending them into a thicket of hydrangea shrubs. In an effort to avoid the unwanted attention of a debauched viscount with a reputation as vile as any in London, Pippa had stolen away to Talbot's side garden. While she debated what to do, the couple found a vacant bench and started making titillating use of it. Pippa's lips parted, a jagged edge on the stone nicking her taffeta gown as she leaned in to get a better view. Her cheeks heated beneath her mask. Who would have guessed one could do that outside? Intrigued by the amorous display, when she should look away, run away, Pippa chewed on her gloved thumb and weighed her options. Damn and blast! If she left her hiding spot, they would see her, which wouldn't be cricket, since the couple was going to the trouble of changing positions. Pippa tilted her head. The man had moved behind the woman, mounting her like her brother's dog, Darla, had mounted that hound they'd come across in Hyde Park last summer. Now, Roan and Helena had five half-hound, half-terrier puppies running loose on their estate grounds. When the ardent groans and whispered entreaties began to escalate, Pippa searched for a means of escape. There was only one way out, a twisting gravel path leading directly past a carnal display no lady should witness outside her marital bedchamber. Perhaps not there either, if the stories she'd heard were true. If Hildegard Streeter or Georgiana Munro, the Duchess of Markham, could see her now, the proprietress of the Duchess Society and her occasional instructors would faint dead away. This entire debacle had simply been Pippa's way of trying to help. Wouldn't Georgie and Hildy want to know that Lord Danehart had a predilection for certain activities that meant he could never be a proper husband for one of their clients? As risky as it had been, attending this ball was the only way to determine if what was rumoured about the man was true. After all, he'd lied about everything on his application to the Duchess Society. The wind ripped at her cloak, and Pippa glanced at a sky leaden with the promise of a brutal storm. How much longer would the couple take? Pippa had heard in hushed comments that the act was thankfully brief. She'd imagined 3 minutes, perhaps five. Closing her eyes, she pressed her cheek against the sculpted sandstone chest of a Greek god of uncertain origin, wondering how to get herself out of this mess. This was what she got for stepping outside her brother's Mayfair terrace, where she supposed she belonged, even if she didn't want to admit it. Disaster occurred whenever she tried to elude her banal existence. But a masquerade was safe, wasn't it? Even one where clothing was optional and the host was rumoured to be partial to engaging in relations with anything, man, woman, or beast.
No one would recognise her. She'd worn an appalling gown and padded her otherwise petite form in all the right places. She'd even taken the extreme but necessary measure of darkening her hair.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?